These people are confused. This needs love got stronger. Do I love God more? Do I love me more? We call it Street Jesus.
Live from the Pathway Studios in Johnston proper, you are Live from the Path.
Pathway Studios here in Youngstown proper. Oh, yes, I am. It's good to be with you this evening. What are you guys doing over there? What the heck?
Dave's having a small side conversation.
I have the intelligence of a bean.
What?
There's not a story behind it, otherwise I'd tell it, man. Move it along.
Okay, that's fair. That's fair. All right. Hey, you're listening live from the Path. Here's what we got going on the show tonight. I'm not sure, really. Mike's got some Pope style advice. Mike, you got a preview on your Pope style?
I've been in the process the last week or two of retooling my parenting style, and frankly, it's retooled my thought process towards Jesus. And so I got some Pope style advice in that arena.
Okay, all right, cool. Got Pope style advice on that. Also, we got some advice on general advice on Dear Life from the Path. People got troubles in the world, and they're desperately seeking answers from late night internet radio. And that's where we can help. We can step in and do that. So we'll see what the troubles of the day are. And Dan, did you come up with your Pope style?
I don't remember.
Oh shoot! So Dan teases a rare Dan Pope style advice, and then has forgotten it.
That was a week ago.
Okay, no, I think that's fair. All right. And just in case you're not familiar, Pope style advice. Basically, someone has some nefarious man at your local bar or supermarket has told a bunch of people that you are the Pope. And so they come to your lawn, and they stand outside, and they refuse to leave until you give them some sort of advice, some sort of good tidings or advice that applies both to your life and to theirs, and they won't leave your lawn until they get some proof of your Pope styleness. And so that's the nature of Pope style advice. So that's what we got going on the show this week. Before we get any further and ruin the show, I want to get a big shout-out to our sponsors, both Bob Eisenhower with the Eisenhower Team. Go to EisenhowerTeam.com. Now may or may not be the time to buy or sell a house. Bob knows those types of things, so you should give him a call or send him an email. That's EisenhowerTeam.com. If you've seen the show at all, you'll know that Bob is a great friend of the show, someone who I use when I've been looking at some houses and stuff, and it's always a great experience. So make sure you hit up Bob. Also, Westfield Veterinary Hospital. Go to WestfieldVetHospital.com for all your animal care needs. That's where I take my dogs, and they've always been very gracious and very kind and help us to find the right balance between treating our pets the way they deserve to be treated and making sure that we can handle it pocketbook style. Because if you bankrupt treating the dog, I can't feed the kids, then I got a whole other problems, you know? So the vet hospitals are really good about that. WestfieldVetHospital.com.
You make me feel guilty every time you talk about that.
And yet no action happens, Dan.
Nothing. My dog is getting older and older.
I never do anything
for
about
years
it.
Now, nothing has happened.
Her legs work guilty. Less and less. The growths keep growing.
Ew. Dan's just not allowed to talk within 30 seconds of the advertisements from now
on. I'm just saying, she needs to go there.
I mean, seriously, people legitimately pay, and Dan's like, I don't do anything they ask me to.
I don't support those businesses that you're trying to advertise for.
When I do, I'll go there.
A ringing endorsement, Dan.
If I ever find myself in this market, they seem like the right people.
All right. So last week we put up one of the things we talked about was the Illuminati at the at the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
Tell me this has gone well on the net.
So here's what I did is I cut a clip, and the basic nature of the conversation was is there was some talk on the net about Illuminati and devil type business in the Super Bowl halftime show, and to sum it all up, we said that's silly. And it makes God look very small, and frankly, it makes people that follow Jesus look very stupid. And I could not believe it, but like almost directly after that, we had a rather engaging conversation outside of the Life from the Path audience with someone who very much thought that this thing was real and that we were dead foolish for having been misled and misguided. So anyway, we put this clip out there, and I just didn't have the time to monitor the thing, so I just disabled comments because I thought I don't want to chase these people around who want to say, hey, I saw a triangle and it was pointing left and it was looking at a duck and a duck is Satan, blah, 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 blah. I don't care. So I disabled the comments. But sure enough, I took a look and we got some views on it, and someone gave us the thumbs down.
Oh.
They say, hey, man, I listened to those guys who said the Satan wasn't at the Super Bowl, and thumbs down. I disagree with it. And so anyway, badge of honor, boys. You've made the devil at the Super Bowl time. Now, here's the deal. However, me and Mike made an ill-fated attempt to live tweet the Grammys.
Holy cats, it was awful. I've never seen our comedy go so bad.
It was very poor. We're very sorry to interrupt this inane and mindless banter, but we're going to fast forward into the show to a more fruitful conversation about parenting already in progress.
All right, we need to change something up. So we were talking to Dave Herrick. Dave Herrick says, here, listen to this dude. He's pretty solid. And so I you know, the wife and I have been listening to this thing this week, and he said a couple, three things that have seemed to really stick with me. And really, just so you got a, kind of a base of what he's talking about, he's almost kind of pushing away from just a rule-based parenting. Like, there are rules involved. There's boundaries involved. But it's a lot more about connecting with your child and letting them make mistakes to the point where they are growing into who they are. Like, your job on this earth as a parent is not to control the child that God gave you. You're to allow it to be what God designed it to be while keeping it safe and letting it learn some lessons in the process and not hammering so hard on some mistakes that they've made. And so, anyway, a couple things that he said during one of these things that just started to really hit me. And the first thing that he was talking about is he said, when Jesus came, he didn't come to make the new Old Testament. And I thought, well, what does that mean, you know? And I think if I was grabbing it right when he was saying it, he was talking about how if when you read most of the Old Testament, most people's picture of God, especially in the Pentateuch, the first five books of the Bible, are a ton of rules. Just here, don't do this, don't do this, don't allow these people in here. If this guy does this, you're going to have to kill him, blah, 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 blah. You know, like just rule after rule after rule. And if you listen to Jesus talk, he doesn't really start laying out a bunch of rules. He lays out a bunch of concepts, a bunch of end results. You know, when he says, like for example, when he's talking on the Sermon on the Mount, he says, "Blessed are those who are merciful, for they shall receive mercy." Right. What he doesn't do is set up all the rules to keep you merciful. He just says, "This is the end game. This is what we're after. This is what the kingdom looks like." Right. And I thought, you know, I'm not parenting that way, right? That's how God's parenting me. I'm not parenting my kids this way. I really like the sentiment. And I think, what is the other thing that he was talking about? He was talking about, they were talking about a rules versus relationship thing that we talk about with God all the time, right? Like, we like to point it at people who are, you know, quote, religious and say, you know, the issue with most of those, that style of living is that you're on a rule-based thing. We like to point at other people and say, you're not following God's rules, you're not following God's rules, you're bad, you did this, whatever. And the gal that was talking, she said, here's the thing, like, when you're reaching for a rule, that's when you know that you're not in relationship. And I thought, does that really ring true, right? So I started to think about some examples of just with my kids, because that's kind of what they were talking about. And I thought, you know, I don't have a rule about playing with forks right by electrical sockets. And I thought, why don't I have a rule like that? That'd be a perfect rule to make, right? You're not allowed to play with forks by electrical sockets. And the truth of the matter is like, I kind of keep an eye on them. They kind of ask me. I kind of know if they got a fork. I kind of know if they're by an electrical socket, right? Like, the rule was unnecessary because the relationship was there. I'm there to keep an eye on them. They ask me if they're going to do something shady or something that they haven't done before. And so the relationship kept the rule from being made. And so it kind of hit me that, like, on the whole, and this is where the kind of the Pope style advice comes in, is like, on the whole, if you find yourself reaching for rules, it's probably best to make sure that you should probably be reaching the other way back towards a relationship of some kind, right? Like, we're generally, especially when we're talking about other people's sin or the way that other people act, because we wouldn't want to look at ourselves, you know, that's bad. But like, when you're starting to point at other people and say they're not following God's rules, I've read the Bible, I know I have, these are the rules that they're not following, and this is bad. Right, the rules they're reaching for, and that the ones you're reaching for is generally because of a lack of a relationship, and that is generally where I find the problem to be. And for some reason, like, both of those things have really hit me. Like I said, not only how I deal with my kids, but like how I perceive Jesus. Right, like when he says, you know, he didn't come to write the new Old Testament, I'm like, why does that mean so much to me? Like, I'm still kind of trying to. So I don't know why that means so much to me, but that is not what he did. And like he and when he was given the Sermon on the Mount,
which is kind of what I put a tune to, the Ten Commandments. I look at Ten Commandments in the Old Testament as like, here's the basis of the rules of God's people. And then Matthew 5, when he's talking about the Sermon on the Mount, he's talking about this is the way that people in the kingdom of God live. I kind of compare those two. And like what he was, and they're two completely different setups, right? Like the Matthew 5 is he explains what it looks like to be in the kingdom of God and not necessarily the rules that are in place to be here, right? Like I don't have to set up rules for you to be, to ensure your joy. I just have to say, look, here's where the joy is. Why don't you just come follow me? It'll be here either way. So anyway, that's my Pope style advice is if you find yourself reaching for rules with your parenting or even just with your general relationship with other people, if you find yourself reaching for rules, double check the relationship because I think that's probably where the problem is.
I love that. We're kind of on the other end. We just finished up parenting, really. I mean, my youngest just turned 18 a few weeks ago. And as I look back, I think that's really how the approach we took. We had hardly any rules. I mean, we weren't like without order, you know, in the home, but it was always concept and big picture, you know. We're Jesus followers. I never told them, "Hey, I'm a preacher, so you're going to act this way." That was never been a conversation, or all these different rules of what you're supposed to look like and how you're supposed to, the words you're supposed to say, blah blah blah. It was always the bigger picture of things. Hey, let's strive to start walking toward Jesus, and it was modeled and it was talked about and it was just our that whole family just did it together. You know, in relationship, and I love that. And you're right. You have your eyes on them at all times. You know, you have the rules in the back of your head. You know, you have the boundaries, and they know how they had boundaries and everything. But there are times you step in and say, "Hey, you're about to hurt yourself, and I'm going to keep you from doing that." By the way, if you do that, it'll hurt yourself. And then later on, they might do it. You give them space, and then they do hurt themselves, and they go, "Ouch," you know. And you're like, "Well, yeah, next time, don't do that." Okay.
Yeah, well, and I think you find that concept really plays itself out when your kids get a little bit older, when they hit their teenage years and whatever. Like, yeah, they're the same kid they were when they were five. You talk to your blue in the face, they're not going to listen to you until it happens. Right now, you're the boundary enforcer when it comes to like their overall safety. Right, like if it's just not a good idea and you have to step in and prevent them, you know that is kind of why God put you on this earth, is to make sure they don't cross a line too far. But like, you know, if it's 10 degrees outside and the kid wants to go out in shorts, well, let him go. He'll come back in 2 minutes and put pants on, right? It ain't going to do you any good to sit there and bark at him and make him put pants on and respect your authority of the pants, right? Just let him go out there in shorts. He'll be back, unless he's booba.
And if all you have are rules and they hit those teenage years, if they don't have the good foundation, their whole goal is to break every one of those rules.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, that's the rebellion thing. I'm on my own. You can't tell me what to do. But if they have the concept, they stick with it.
Well, I mean, yeah, you know, like where you've totally kind of boxed someone in on a rules only platform, you've basically are preparing for an existence that they will never live in, right?
Yeah.
That like it's to say we don't want you to experience life or to be pointed to a life in which, if you understand these concepts, you can react in any given situation. All we're saying is that we're going to limit the situations in which you are in. And it doesn't teach you how to function at all. And so you can be presented with a nuance of a circumstance that you've never seen, and without someone there to slap your hand about it, like, you freak out. And to be honest, like, that's where a lot of the arguments and stuff, the church argues about petty stuff, and they tend to do it in public. And like, a lot of the arguments that people that are following Jesus are having amongst each other are rule-based hand-slapping that ignore the concept of where Jesus is ultimately pointing us to. Like, we want to argue where lines are, where boxes are checked, where rules exist. And like, if we were simply following the heart of Jesus and doing the work of his kingdom, those become irrelevant things. Mm-hmm. And it was actually, we've kind of talked about this recently. It's one of the things where you know, make a distinction between what's appropriate with between art and pornography, right? Like, where is there a line somewhere? And the truth is that, like, Jesus simply doesn't give one. He doesn't say, you know, if it's if you got three quarters of the top of the left buttock, that's going to be just all right. But if it's lit a certain way and there's a guy within 10 feet, porn. Like, it doesn't work that way. There is a way to enjoy or otherwise take in beauty that God has created, and not have to say, you know, there's specifically a place in which this is not right. The truth is, though, is that oftentimes when we're trying to find those arbitrary lines, we make weird boxes that don't actually represent the heart of God. If you are pursuing God and following him, you'll make good choices. There's things that I can't handle. things that other people might be able to. And so I know that because I'm following God. And he didn't have to say, Ben, this is the box you can check. It's just like some art stuff. I just, it's not for me. It's not for me because I can't take it in the right way and I have to let it sit. And that's just the nature of it. And so, like, that's one of those things where we want to see boxes checked and lines drawn. And the whole nature of the Sermon on the Mount is he's saying, I'm not going to do that. I'm not telling you lines. That's what the Old Testament was. These were boxes to check, lines to draw, and you got your identity as to whether those boxes were checked or the lines were crossed. And your identity is not in those things. It's in me. And so you follow me. You pursue me. And then we're not talking about boxes anymore. Because there's no, I mean, he's a man that cannot be contained by boxes. If your identity is his identity and all you have to do is follow, you seem far less taken up in what can I not do? Because, like, you simply don't have a desire to kind of tease that line and say, well, Jesus, can I get away with this? It's just, it's not part of our conversation anymore. And frankly, it makes life a lot simpler.
It's kind of funny. I preached Sunday on divorce, marriage, and remarriage.
Yep.
And you could tell who the box checkers were after the service. You know, they kept having the conversation. Well, I don't know if you're right here, you know, or you're not right there. Or it's like, you know. Where's the heart of God in this whole thing?
Yeah, no boxes, right?
Yeah.
I mean, and those are those types of issues where, like, we want boxes because we're like, I want to be able to make a decision and say, it's black or white. Check the box. This is wrong. This is right. This is morally good. This is morally bad. And generally, it's not just because we want to affirm ourselves as morally good. We want to affirm someone else as morally bad. Like, we want someone else to be on the wrong side of the equation, a way to say, that guy stinks. He's not acting the way he's supposed to. I'm vindicated. I'm righteous in this circumstance. Yeah. And Jesus, frankly, just elevates above all of it and says, it's not the point. It's not the point. It's not about your righteousness. It's not. I'm asking you to follow me and things will be fine. It's where you want to have your own arguments that are underneath the things that I like that are broadly pointing to my end game. That's when we have a problem. And that's when we spend a lot of time bickering and fighting and trying to be justified and prove our moral rightness to people. And that's it's not relevant to Jesus' conversation.
That'll actually be a very awkward conversation, I think, is when you have to walk up to Jesus, you know, when you get there and he asks you about it and you say, well, you know, your Bible wasn't really clear on that. And he says, yeah, but my voice was. And that pretty much means that you weren't listening to him. And, like, I've followed Jesus long enough to know that when I ask him, he will answer me. And he will tell me what it is that I need to know. Even if it's that I don't need to know. You know what I'm saying? But, like, I followed him long enough to know that when I'm paying attention to him and asking him to intercede in my life, he will certainly do that. And so, like, any, I don't know, any doubt or any questions that I'm struggling with, it's kind of on me. I feel like that I'm not listening and I'm not paying attention because I can search that Bible all day long for some really gray areas and I can come out to exactly the answer that I wanted it to be. But, like, if I want really what God wants, I have to ask him and trust that he's going to answer me. And, like, I've not had him not do that yet.
Everything all right over there, boo-boo? You fall asleep?
No, I'm just listening, actually.
Okay. Good. That's it, Mike? Pope style, get off my lawn?
That's it. Well, I wasn't going to say it rude like that because I'm trying to keep relationships with the people on the lawn. So, like, look, you guys can stick around if you want. I'm going to have to ask you to leave pretty soon. So I'm going to give you a choice. Either you can leave now or you can hang around and I'm going to lock the bathroom door and you can leave later when you got to go.
So at least take an offering first.
No, we don't take offering there.
Got to pay for that new grass.
So anyway, Pope's advice, do the right thing. Love on people.
All right. You're listening to Live from the Path. I think that's hard. I think it's a hard concept because we've staked a lot of moral ground on checking boxes. A lot of way to say who's in, who's out, who does the thing, who doesn't do the thing, because we want someone to check a box across a line and say, you cross the line, you're wrong. And the truth is like, it's not that there aren't ways to discern that. It's not like you don't know what, like, Jesus is pretty clear, like, this is not what I have for you. This is not what I've designed for you. But, like, we've staked a lot of firm ground as if those are the points of distinction as opposed to whether Jesus is the point of distinction. And we've probably wasted a lot of breath doing that. And it's unfortunate, but I understand it. Like, it's a desire to say, if I knew my boundaries, God, then I could play within them. I know I could be safe. It's a desire to say, I just want to be safe within these boundaries, and then I don't have to worry about it anymore. And that's because we've given up our sense of what is good and what is righteous and what is moral to a point in time, as opposed to saying, Yeah, it's just the way to live. It's a way to live. It's a way to treat people. It's a way to follow. It's a way to obey. And we want to be able to look at guideposts and say, I was moral there. I made the right decision there. I did the right thing.
It's a way to disengage a little bit.
Yeah.
I can live my life. Just give me my list. I'll stay away from the list. I don't have to engage in Jesus a whole lot.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, and it's one of the things that we talked about. Like, there's something within me that says I would really like to I feel like I'd like to go out in the middle of Montana and build a small cabin and live with my family for like 60 years and farm crap. I don't know. But like, it's not in the cards. It's not in the cards for me as someone who loves Jesus and loves people. Like, it is simply not something that I can do. And like, what this following Jesus thing as opposed to checking boxes, although like they will, like you'll stay within the bounds as you pursue him, it caused you to live your life on a high wire. It caused you to say that like you are constantly moving. There's not a point in time where you stop and say, I've made it. I've reached the thing. I've done the right thing and not the wrong thing, right? It is a consistent walk in which you are following, pursuing, to stay on the road that God has you on. And sometimes we would like the safety of not having to do that, to be able to just call our day and say things are done. I did the right thing, and now I don't have to walk this anymore. And that's simply not the nature of our existence. We will continue to exist, regardless. The question, are we engaged in the actual operation of our life, or do we just kind of bow out and call the balls and strikes until it fades away? Put that on a bumper sticker. All right, you're listening to Life from the Path. Yeah, all right. Mike, do you have some other advice and stuff over there?
I got some Dear Life from the Path.
Okay, yeah, hook me up.
You want to live on it?
Yeah, hit me with it.
Here we go. Dear Life from the Path. I recently found out my ex-boyfriend married the girl he cheated on me with, and they have had a baby. I didn't think it would affect me because it has been 9 years since our breakup, but I feel devastated and sad all over again. I constantly wonder why he was blessed with the happy ending I was wishing for. I ask myself why I haven't met anyone worthwhile. I am scared to go through the hurt and pain again, so I put on a smiling face for everyone. I want to forget this miserable relationship and be happy. What can I do to move on with my new life? New Jersey. Or old Jersey.
So the concept was that she was dating this guy.
9 years ago.
9 years ago, he cheated on her with another girl. They've had a baby after 9 years.
They're married.
I assume this happens recently, right?
Yeah, I suppose.
The baby's shown up, and she wants to know how I can move on from this circumstance.
Why is it still bothering her so?
That's a long time.
9 years is a long time.
How old was I 9 years ago? I was like 8.
I can see there being like a twinge. You're like, oh, man. But hopefully by then you've kind of moved on. So she needs to kind of let go. She's never let go of the relationship.
I don't think she's probably ever heard that advice before, Dan. She's been working at it for 9 years.
Maybe she needs someone to sing it.
Get right.
Let it go.
So, all right. So let's walk through the options that people would otherwise consider. Right? Is the right way to get over that to find somebody else?
No.
Why not, Bova?
The relationship that she wants to get into isn't what's going to make her happy. If she's not happy in the situation that she's already presented with and in herself, she's not going to be happy with another person. It's not like that's the completion that happens when you get in that relationship, that's what makes you happy. You need to be happy separately and in hopefully in a relationship with God. But you need to be happy separately before you're ever going to be happy together. The relationship she's looking for isn't going to give her satisfaction.
That's okay. True. If you can't stay afloat in your own black hole, you're just going to suck other people in there.
Yeah, really.
Exactly. Doing that stuff. You're like a vortex of happy.
Hey, we're both not in a ship right now. Do you want to just hang on to each other and both pull each other down? Sure.
Double the weight drowns faster. You know what I'm saying? I don't even know what that means. Sounded really good. I mean, it sounded real good.
I'm going to go secular, and I'm going to go China.
Okay. All right. So, if finding someone else is the answer, what is she? She's devastated by this deal. She's hanging on to it.
I think you should go talk to him.
She needs
go
to
talk to
him.
What are you going to say to this guy?
Hey, I'm devastated.
Okay, I'm happily married.
I'm sorry. then run away with your head in your hands.
Hey, do you remember when we were back in the 90s and we were in a relationship? Perhaps we talk about back then?
I mean, I think you can readily acknowledge it's obvious this man has handled things poorly, right? Like, he's not fulfilled his responsibility in the relationship when it started. However, he's moved on.
Yeah.
The nature of life is that he's moved on. He's married. He's got a kid. It kind of seals the deal on whether you're getting back with this man. And so maybe it's the understanding is that, like, you are mourning something that you feel like you've lost, but in all honesty, you never had it, right? Okay, this is going to seem like a crude example relative to the...
Why? Well, you have to tell a crude example.
It's not crass. Like, oh, okay. Crude as in, it's not a one... It doesn't seem like on the same level, okay? But, like, it happens with my kids quite a bit. They'll be like, "Hey, man, hey, can we have a cookie?" And I'm like, "No, no, you're not having a cookie tonight." And then one of them will cry. They're like, "Woohoo! You know, we thought we wanted a cookie." And I'll say, "Why are you crying?" I said, "Well, because we're not going to get a cookie." And I said, "Babe, you were never going to get a cookie. Like, you're mourning a cookie that was never yours. You didn't lose a cookie. You invented one and then are mourning that it's gone."
Your kids are going to hate you. Why would you say something like that?
Yeah, your kids aren't going to like you after that one.
The truth is like, you're mourning something that was never yours. You're mourning a truth that was never actually real, right? And so, like, if you're looking at this relationship with this guy and saying, "Look at what I've lost." It really wasn't there. The thing that you've lost didn't exist. The man cheated on you with another woman.
It might have been real to her, but not to him.
Well, that's the thing, though.
That makes it not real, though, right?
It's not real.
Right, yeah.
And that's the point. And, like, nobody likes that, right? But the truth is like, what you're holding on to is harmful to you. But, like, what you feel like you've lost, to be honest with you, you didn't lose because you didn't really have it. Mm-hmm. Because this man was not as committed to you as you were to him. And that's the truth. And so, like, at some point, you have to stop mourning the fact that it's gone because you've assigned too much value to it to begin with. You haven't lost a cookie. You never had a cookie.
Yeah.
How'd your kids take that when you said you never had the cookie?
They wept all the louder. They said, "You spoke truth, Dad, and I hate you for it. Teach me a concept." Sorry.
I hate your rules.
Check the cookie box, Dad.
Hey, listen, this guy, I mean, he's bad news from the beginning. He's not going to offer you the closure that you're seeking. And what he actually does have to offer is even worse. I mean, he's already kind of proved his moral character to begin with back when you had a relationship with him. And the problem is the stakes are even higher now that he's married. And there's a chance that you going back to him might end up destroying something for other people. So just move. I mean, get over it. The guy is not what you thought he was. And you just need to be aware of that. Don't go back to him. It's just going to be toxic for you, for everyone else involved.
Okay.
Or you could meet him at his house and say, "Look, I'm devastated." And cry like I said earlier.
No, yeah. No, that was. You're right, Mike. That seems
you
like.
You guys don't understand the human spirit at all.
Seems like a good option.
There we go. Secular's advice is, one way to move forward would be to keep busy so you won't brood.
Wow.
Make an effort to meet new people.
Start playing Clash of Clans.
Because the saying, "No risk, no reward," is true. If you have saved any mementos of your relationship with your ex-boyfriend, box them up and put them away. Or get rid of them entirely because this chapter of your life is finished.
Okay, option one is a bad option. Box them up and put them away. Get rid of them. That's the right option.
Or go give them back to him. Anything to see him one more time.
Here's your lock of hair.
Mike, you should not go back in any instance. So what was our advice to her? What should she do?
What was your guys' advice or mine?
I think we talked about what not to do, but what should she do?
She needs to forgive him, and she's only hurting herself.
Which he can't do in a non-face-to-face encounter.
Sure he can. You can just move on.
I've created a caricature of you out of macaroni noodles.
I took a picture of the shrine I have of you.
The remainder of secular advice is, I can't guarantee this will bring you another romance, but it will be a step in the right direction.
She's not ready for another romance.
Yeah.
She's got to fix herself first.
It's the hardest thing in the world, but you need to forgive that man and move on.
There's nothing to forgive except for his handsome
ways. He's
wronged
her, and she needs to forgive it.
He was kind and loving, and just meeting him one more time, I think, will just...
He was kind and loving to the wrong person.
All right.
Okay, here we go. Dear Life from the Path, I am 26 and recently started a new job that I consider a leap forward in my career. Good. It's been only 2 weeks, and my boss has already told me she thinks I am trying too hard and compensating for my age. Honestly, I was just excited to come in to work and do my best. This is my work ethic.
Is this a union job?
Dan?
All right, Dan.
What?
I have swallowed her criticism due to it's a union.
You're working too hard.
It doesn't say that. I have swallowed her criticism and now lying low, but my confidence is shot, and I'm now questioning if I made the right decision joining this company. I can try to be quiet for a few weeks, but internally it is torture. I thought I was hired for my leadership skills and experience, but apparently I am intimidating. I've tried to brush the criticism off and put it in perspective, but I'm really hurt that traits I've been praised for before are being picked over now. How do I put these feelings aside and continue to work, and what should be my approach? How much should I modify who I am?
Yeah. You know what's weird about people? Is they always ask a question in the form of an answer. How do I put these things aside and move forward? Well, you put these things aside and move forward. Thank you.
Yeah, I would suggest
I'm worth every bit of the penny that you paid me.
I would suggest you modify yourself to the point that they continue paying you.
I think they need a new job. They're not a good match for this job. They need to move
Dan
on.
Dan says quit.
Yeah, quit.
Your kingdom be done.
That's right.
Don't change your kingdom for nothing.
So here's the deal. I would say like either shut up or quit. Like either. First of all, I feel like he's overshot himself.
It's a woman.
I thought the woman was the boss. This is a woman too?
I'm a 26-year-old. Wait a minute. I am a 20. No, it doesn't say whether it's a man or a woman.
It's a man.
I assumed it was a lady.
I think it's a man. He thinks very highly of himself when he shouldn't.
What kind of stereotypical jerk am I? I thought it was a lady. I'm not sure why.
That is rough times. Move on. I think it's a dude. And I think he's like, I've been praised for these skills. Now, I've never had a boss say, hey, you're trying too hard. Unless he didn't hear the feedback right. We're like, he's overdoing it. Like, it's not that his effort is wrong. It's that he is trying to project something more than what he is, right? He's putting on a bit of a facade. And that is too much.
He's 26. He was not hired for his experience. He's 26.
Okay.
He's telling lies.
Like, that seems kind of what I'm saying.
Okay, good.
I'm saying, like, here's the deal.
I don't have any legitimate advice. I just like to pick the man apart.
Yeah, so here's like, in that situation, and legitimately, here's what I would tell someone is, like, I think you should strongly consider the fact that they're correct and you're not. Being that they run the company, like, they're the management of the company and you are not.
Yeah, what benefit is it to them to, like, break you down and...
Yeah, I mean, they're paying you money and they want you to do work. Like, I mean, it could be that they're seriously threatened, but, I mean, you're like the guy that walks into the Abercrombie and Fitch and immediately thinks that everyone there is threatened by your presence.
Yeah. That's me.
Yeah. Well...
That's what I'm talking about.
There could be some truth there. But, like, I mean, seriously, if they hired you to be, like, the customer service representative and you're trying to help out with the accounting, yeah, you're overstepping your bounds, brother. Get back into your desk. You know what I'm saying? I think it's one of those situations.
Yeah, I mean, quit and go where you're appreciated, which is probably nowhere because you believe that you're underappreciated. Or people may actually be trying to help you and point you in the right direction, and you should have some humility and stick with it. And here's actually why, the more I think about it, the more I think that's the case. He gave his frame in weeks. I can only put up with this for weeks.
Before I bust back
it's
out.
It's been a couple weeks.
I'm a phoenix. No one contains me.
That's what I'm saying. Like, that's a pretty short time frame to say, hey, did I check this out for long enough to make sure things are right?
Maybe they'll appreciate your passionate leadership at the Taco Bell anytime.
I think he went into a place that's pretty complacent and lazy, and he's got work ethic.
You're the one that set it up as a union gig, Dan. It doesn't say that in there.
I observe life. That's all I do. I don't know if it's a union or not, but they're lazy and complacent. And this guy wants to work, so go somewhere where they like to work.
Yeah, I feel like it's probably more the customer service guy trying to do the accountant's job. That's what I feel like this dude's doing. Go ahead, Boova. You know corporate life. How'd you become the way you are?
Nice. Thank you for that call out. That was wonderful. Honestly, I think you're wrong, Mike. I think that this guy isn't overstepping his bounds. I think that he might just have a manager that's threatened by him trying to do a good job.
You would
now,
say that.
I say this from this perspective because I don't like not doing the best job that I can. Right, it drives me nuts.
Absolutely.
And I'm not saying that the best job that I can is the best that has ever been done. No, I'm not saying that from a prideful standpoint. I'm just saying if I'm going to take pride in my work, you know, I want to do a good job. And if this guy has a level of doing a good job, and then if the feedback was actually what he was told, where you're overcompensating for age or, you know, you're trying too hard kind of deal like that, if I'm told that by a manager, my response is, well, this is what you hired me for, and this is how I'm going to do it.
I feel like it's probably not what they hired him for. That's where the overcompensation
was
to
work hard?
They hired him to do customer service, and he's trying to cook the books.
It doesn't say that he overstepped his boundaries by doing a different job. He says that...
Yeah, he didn't say that. He's presenting the story.
Yeah.
As if he's been wrong.
He's going to tell it like he's the best guy ever.
So you guys are taking that he's overcompensating, and he is actually overstating what he's doing.
Here's the deal. So, like, I've been in corporate America for 13 years. Okay, decade plus, right? I've never met someone who has found a top, like a high performer doing their work and discouraged them because of their top performance.
That's right.
I have.
Never.
We're getting too much of a value out of you. We're paying you X dollars. You're worth twice as much. Tone it down.
I do not have a decade plus of customer service experience, but I've seen that.
Maybe you.
I have seen that from. I've seen that from leadership where they're intimidated by someone who's working, and it was not me. So this is not me saying that I was wronged in this way.
I'm not saying that it doesn't exist. I'm just saying like it's not my experience.
I'm gonna go with Boova. Okay. It's usually an indication of a poor leadership skill to begin with that someone can't recognize talent and put talent to work for them. But yeah, it, The problem is you're in a situation where you're matched up with someone who, quite frankly, just long term will not be able to lead you. You probably have either just divergent work ethic or else they just don't have the leadership ability to continue following you. So, yeah, I'd start looking for another job.
By the way, gentlemen, I would agree with the check your pride deal. This guy needs to stop talking about himself that much, but I think that could be...
Here's the deal. Is like, based on how he's described himself, you've ignored that completely and decided that he's a virtuous character.
I believe him.
Yeah, I don't. I don't believe him.
Okay.
I think he's a prideful doofus.
I was Ben.
Yeah.
Okay.
I guess it's been weeks and I'm underappreciated.
We have divided advice.
I've never felt so
But I'm obviously telling the complete truth about my own worth ethic when everyone else is up to get me.
Sympathize with the guy writing in saying how great he is. That's ridiculous. He's obviously weaving a web. I've never felt so much tension in this room.
I'm not saying, here's the deal. I'm not saying
that I think all of us are smiling. I don't think there's really any tension here.
No, I'm bad, baby.
My relationship with you guys is not riding on this stuff. I still care about all of you. You're fine.
So I'm not saying what the two of you guys are implying can't be true. I'm just saying, based upon his explanation, I don't think it's true in this circumstance.
Okay.
Yeah, and no cookie for you, Booba.
Yeah, that's fine. I don't need any more cookies.
Never your cookie.
It should never be my cookie.
My children love me.
Here's what Secular says. Sometimes when starting a new job, it is wise to remain quiet until one gets the lay of the land and understands how the company functions before jumping in. My advice is to continue to lie low. If things don't improve, schedule another conference with your boss. Tell her you thought you had been hired for your leadership skills and experience, but if you are coming across to others as abrasive, you need to know so you can change it. Let her guide you. If it doesn't work after that, recognize that not all job placements are a good fit and start looking for something that is.
Yeah.
I got no side commentary there.
No, I think it's all right.
All right. Yeah. My gas advice out of a bowl full of Jello and get about the same response. Here we go. Dear Life from the Path. No, I'm not done yet. I'm thinking about something else. I was trying to get rid of it. We entertain frequently because in our large group of longtime friends, we are the only ones who do. In this way, we assure to some degree that the friendships survive. Folks sometimes volunteer to bring something, but often they don't. Even when they do, they put it together while I'm in the middle of my own preparations. They interrupt me by asking for a serving dish, and sometimes want to use the oven while I'm using it. This is not my idea of helping. Otherwise, they are very dear people. But with the passage of time, I am losing my affection for them. If we don't entertain, no one will, and the friendships won't survive. Life from the Path, do you have any suggestions, or is it too late? I got a suggestion for you.
Yes, no. No, the ship has sailed.
Yeah.
Sever ties and cut ship.
Lock the door, man. Don't let those folks back in.
Yeah.
They asked to use the oven. You got to be kidding me.
They want to actually talk to you?
If all of your friendships are based off of random dinners, there's a lot more at stake than just someone trying to ask to use your oven.
Where'd you find this group of bison coming over? Borrowing a serving tray. You got to be kidding me.
But Harold, if we stop serving dinner, all of our friendships will die.
What?
That is
you know what I would do? I'd give it a test run. I'd say, look, we're not doing a dinner next year. Well, we're moving to Connecticut. I can't put up with this garbage.
I joined
You're
the book club.
Me and let me use your butter dish. I'm out.
Whose oven will I use?
How will I cook these sweet potatoes?
I got an idea. I'm just throwing it out there with these friends of yours. Hey, man, if you're going to bring something over, give me a heads up so I know you need to use the oven and so I can plan appropriately. Or, better yet, cook it at home. Bring with you. Love, friend.
Yeah. Buy some at McDonald's and bring it over here. I don't care. You can't. I only got one oven.
Like, I mean, here's the deal. What's the worst that can happen if you say that, right? You're already afraid that you've lost the friendship because of this incident. The worst they can do is be like, this is outrageous. We should use your oven without permission if we want to. We're leaving. Like, the worst that can happen is the thing that you're already proposing.
Yeah, here's the deal. If they were that good of friends, like, I mean, if one of y'all came over to my house and we were having a dinner and you show up with, like, a half-cooked casserole and say, hey, look, man, can I put this in the oven? I'd say, I only have one oven. And you knew I was making dinner. What the heck? You know what I'm saying? Like, the conversation would have been had and over with. Like, I have one oven. Plan accordingly.
And I'd be like, room for one more?
I can't cook 15 things in here. Cook the casserole at your place, put it in a hot plate, and bring it over. I mean, that conversation, if you were that close of friends, it had happened already. You're stuck on some kind of weird formality or don't know them well enough to be honest with
them. It seems like the relationship is tenuous at best. Yeah. If we don't hold the dinner, everyone leaves.
I think we need to address the concept of the person that's writing the letter, too, because they said that they grow tired of these relationships because the person is asking to use their oven. Now, I get that that could be a little bit annoying if you're trying to throw a dinner and someone keeps going, hey, my sweet potatoes need your oven. But if you're growing tired of the relationships because of that, it doesn't sound like you had a very strong relationship in the
first
place.
I don't know, that crap's annoying. I mean, I'm with her on that.
Annoying, absolutely. But, like, your relationship is hinged upon whether or not at dinner they're going to ask to use your oven. It's ridiculous.
It's only habitual because she refuses to say something. Hey, Ingrid, you can't keep doing this. Cook your potatoes at home.
Cook your potatoes at home, yes.
I feel like, you know, if it's 20 times in, you can't be outraged. You caused this.
Yeah, if I'm going to keep this superficial relationship going, I need you to start cooking your own food at your own house.
Well, here's it. I mean, there's a certain amount of annoying behavior that, like, it starts to make you wonder if they're actually your friend. You know what I'm saying? Like, now maybe the oven thing might be a moot point, but let's say, guy, you invite people over to your house for a once a month dinner, and every time they come over, they snag a roll of toilet paper, take it with them, like, take it right off the roll and haul out.
Thieves.
Yeah,
you have thieves for.
They're
friends.
Like, hey, we're out at home. I'm going to take this toilet paper.
Okay.
So this happens 6 months straight, right? And you're like, seriously. Do you even like me? Like, do you see me as some kind of fool or a shuckster that you're depleting my toilet paper supply one roll at a time?
Why would I say, Mike, why do you keep stealing my two-ply?
Well, but that's what I'm saying. You would say that, but, like, the fact that someone would do that to you would make you think, look, I don't know what your end game here is. You're getting a free food and a free roll of toilet paper. I feel like you don't really like me.
I would say you don't know how much this two-ply helps in my financial picture.
You need to love on them and buy them a whole package and put them in their car the next time they come over.
You've blessed me with royalty paper that I can't afford on my own.
So for this example, you'd say install another oven. Prepare for your bum buddies and just get another oven.
If Absolutely. She said, hey, man, I have trouble paying the power bill, so I cook at your place, but I'm too embarrassed to say it, so I just act like I was low on time, I'd be like, I'm glad to be gracious to you.
You're love jerk. On people, Mike.
You're a jerk, Mike.
No, you're
big meaty, dude. Buy them a 24-pack of toilet paper.
Yeah.
I can't afford that.
Here's the deal. A guy that's...
I'm already 10 rolls down. I'm pretty much buying a 34-pack.
You're investing.
A guy that's stealing toilet paper needs your love.
He needs something. Here we go.
More toilet paper.
Secular says, it may be too late because a pattern has been established.
No!
Hold on. The fish is reeling in. The pattern has been established, and you're complaining to the wrong person. If you preferred that your kitchen not be invaded, you should have communicated that to the invaders who were getting in your way at the time it happened. Do these people socialize with you at all unless it's at your parties? Even if these, quote, friends are unwilling or unable to entertain on the scale that you do, they long ago should have made some attempt to reciprocate your hospitality, and they appear to have made little or no effort. You might feel less taken advantage of if you widen your circle of acquaintances to include some couples with a stronger grasp of the social graces. Yeah, Secular's saying, look, get rid of these guys. They're Moabites. Cut them out.
Ruth was a Moabite.
I didn't really know what that meant. I just said it.
Lineage of Jesus. That means keep them. Let them use your oven.
Okay, you ready? You got time for one more?
Yeah.
Okay, here we go. Ooh, wait a minute. Hold on. Dear Life from the Path, is there a polite way to ask a colleague to stop bringing her kids to work? Our offices are right next to each other, and the dividing wall doesn't reach the ceiling. I have to hear them yelling at each other. They're 2 and 4, crying and whining, and their mother's attempts at discipline, etc. This isn't occasional. It happens often. Should I ask her politely to stop bringing them to work, or should I ask management to shift my office away from hers? Distracted.
Okay. Here's the thing. This actually more appropriately ties to the question I was asking about the oven. People don't bring their 2 and 4-year-old to work just because they like it. You know what I'm saying? Like, there has got to be an underlying circumstance as to why this 2 and 4-year-old is at work. I don't know of anybody who's like, you know what would make my day better? A couple toddlers hanging around my place harassing me all the time while I'm trying to get work done. Seems very unlikely. All right. So I would first start from a position of grace to say I have no idea why this circumstance exists. But to the extent that it really bothers me because I couldn't stand it, perhaps she's in the same boat and does not want to be there. So I would start there. And see if maybe I can't tell whether this woman's a legitimate friend or just kind of a coworkerish type,
a catty beast.
Yeah, could be a catty beast. I would attempt to find out through normal people means, and say, "Hey, I notice you have your kids around quite a bit. What's up? I couldn't take having my kids here." And then see what she says, and maybe perhaps get to know her story just a little bit.
Yeah, I can't imagine a company allowing that anyway. I mean, it's got to be in a handbook somewhere, like, oh, don't bring your toddlers to work 3 times a week. I mean, I don't know.
Very specific rule, Dan.
Well, you know.
Here's the deal. Do you guys remember that story I told you a couple weeks ago? I can't remember if I told it on air or not, but, like, I was driving to work, and I passed a guy who had, like, a kid. He was walking around downtown and had a kid, like, fireman style on his shoulder.
Yep.
Okay. So, anyway, like, I saw that guy, and I'm like, something's up. Something's up. It's not a normal thing to go about. Something has to be going on. So I stopped and talked to him, right? So, like, this seems like a very same circumstance. He's like, it may not be that that's normally what's to be done, but the man was in a pickle. And, like, it's what had to be done given his circumstance. I'm just saying, like, to look at that and see someone that is in that position with the two kids over while they're working, and your reaction is, this is really harming me, even though it may be. Like, there has to be something going on in that circumstance that you should be a little gracious about and try to figure out what it is. Like, and if it turns out that she's just, like, cheap or she doesn't have any legit issues and just likes to have her kids around her, then, yeah, then I think I would move forward with this has to stop. It's causing me not to be able to work well. But beyond that, like, I would assume there's something underlying this problem.
You know, what you're facing right now can probably be dealt with just a pair of headphones. What she might be facing is worlds different from this. So, yeah, tread lightly. Realize it's easier for you to solve your issue than for her to solve hers.
And here's the deal. No one looks glorious attempting to parent your children right next to somebody for 8 hours a day. I mean, that cookie episode would come out directly. Someone would turn me in.
Actually, I find if you really push the relationship with the children and not so much the rules, that they will behave themselves as desired.
I feel like you guys are taking this all wrong, and I would just hire two toddlers myself to be equally as annoying to run around in my cubicle.
Yeah, tell me how that's going to go. Look, I'd like to buy two children.
Go to Toys R Us. Hey, can I buy two kids?
Do you have any really unruly ones that really tear crap up?
Take that, Brenda.
Hey, Brenda, meet my new kids.
Hey, look.
And then
they don't have any
toys
on.
And fake guns and all this different stuff. They're like, hey, that person, I don't like that person. Go take care of them. And they'd run over to Brenda's office and take care of the situation.
How would you even
cause a toddler fight?
Yeah, I don't know.
Here's the real Boova answer.
Okay.
I hear this coming from right out of Boova's mouth.
It probably did.
Rather than risk a confrontation with your coworker,
go to HR.
This is something you should discuss either with your supervisor or your employer.
Come on.
While I emphasize with the woman's difficulty in finding someone to supervise her youngsters, if their presence in the workplace is disruptive, your needs should be accommodated.
That is not straight out of my mouth, man. I would never say
something
like that.
You should talk to your manager or supervisor.
You should talk to HR about that and call the associate helpline.
We will Six Sigma our way right through this thing.
call your corporate 1-800 helpline.
By the way, are those approved workplace slacks?
I will be accommodated.
Dress above the room. No jeans.
And your ID badge is to sit on your desk, not on your pants. Okay. So, secular advice was pretty much, look, take it to HR. Don't try to have any human interaction with this woman. She's obviously just a robot or a mobster, and you have no reason to have any legit conversation with her to find out what her deal is. Just take it right to the corporate shrill who will come down and hint at her for a while and ask her why she's done this.
Here's the deal. People,
go to human resources.
Other people's shoes are simply, like, are generally not comfortable. And it may be true that they chose them, but it doesn't make it comfortable. You know what I'm saying? Like, whatever circumstances exist in these people's life, and, like, there's some really hardcore, doofusy, awful characters that I've worked with in my day, right? But, like, And some of the choices they made in their life caused their circumstances to be that poor and caused them to be annoying and difficult to deal with. It still can't be easy being that guy. He's annoying as all get out and has to live with himself. So, like, I can have sympathy even with the man that bothers me because he has to deal with his own personality all the time. And so, like, I just have a little grace for people. Like, your needs will be a...
See,
I hate that. I hate it.
Your
hate
statement is,
you will be accommodated.
I will have to deal with this guy because he has to deal with himself, and that must be much worse.
Here's think of the most spiteful, hateful man, and you're like, I cannot stand the way this guy looks at life. I cannot stand the way that he deals with other people. But the truth is like, that's not coming from a healthy position. He may even doing it on purpose, and he may even enjoy it when he does it. But the root of all that stuff is a very unhealthy life, generally without joy and grace. And so, yeah, I have sympathy for that man. And if nobody loves him, it's going to have to be me. And I hate that. But it's going to have to be me. So there you go.
Okay. Call HR.
Knock it off, Brenda. This is ridiculous.
I'm overqualified for this job. People think that I'm too assertive, and I want you to get them kids out of here.
Management says that I'm showing off and overcompensating for my age.
I can wash the windows, too. So I'm going to do that.
Human resources, ironic.
And how does supervisor not even know about it?
Yeah, I'm sure they do.
Two toddlers running around.
It's probably a daycare. It probably works in a daycare.
They probably just thought they'd throw two kids in. Don't know the difference.
Brenda keeps bringing in her 2 and 4-year-olds. You work at a daycare, Linda. Calm down.
Wait,
they're everywhere.
Their names are Linda and Brenda?
I expected it to be close. I reached into my brain to find something, and it turned into word association.
Hey, Linda.
What is like Brenda?
I'm going to call Belinda.
Brenda's close
that.
To Linda. Brenda and Linda. That's why they're best friends, and the 2 and 4-year-olds are ruining their relationship.
Hatfield McCoy.
Brenda keeps trying to cook food at Linda's house. It's awful, okay?
I only got one oven. You dummy.
Stop stealing my toilet paper, Linda.
Potato's going to cook on a sidewalk.
There's a radiator.
You want to do one more? You got to take a break? What do you
No, we got one more.
Okay, here we go. Last one. Dear Life from the Path, I have a family friend whose son has been engaged twice to 2 different ladies. The first engagement was broken off by him, and the second by his fiancée. Each time, his family threw him an engagement party, which he wanted, and I was invited to both. Each time, as is customary, I bought a gift for the happy couple.
Yep, there was.
There we go.
Neither one was returned after the engagement was broken. The first party was a pleasure to attend. The second one I found slightly awkward, but I wanted to be supportive of my friend. I brought a gift the second time because I didn't want to be impolite. If my friend's son becomes engaged a third time and has an engagement party to which I invited, am I obligated to bring a gift?
This is a hypothetical. He's not engaged the third time.
He's currently not engaged the third time. He just wants to be sure. He's planning on being a jerk in the future.
I was going to say, way to make your generosity as black and white as humanly possible. Now, am I morally obligated to bring this person a present? That's ridiculous.
I'm a cheap Charlie, and I don't want to bring roller skates.
If your generosity is pitted against this, like, law abiding that you need to do when it comes to, is it first, second, or third... numerically, am I obligated to buy a present? That's ridiculous. If you care about the person, you have the money to buy the present, buy the flipping present.
But based on your attitude in this question, I'm not so sure that this is even going to be an issue. You're not going to get a third invite. This relationship's
falling
apart.
Although that guy kept the present, so.
I would.
I mean, that's a little shifty.
It is a little awkward, the whole situation.
Yeah. I would say round two, when you keep all the gifts at your second engagement party, I mean, there's got to be some form of guilt in your place. Like, hey, I got 3 coffee pots, all from fake marriages.
What is an engagement party? I got gifts at my wedding. I didn't have an engagement party.
You throw a party that you're engaged, man, and then people show stuff.
No, that's stupid. You wait until they're married.
I never said it was a good decision. I'm just explaining what it is, man.
You're making me mad, Booba.
That's fair.
Why do you live this
life? Here's the deal. If I was engaged 2 different times to 2 different ladies that got broke off.
You disgust me.
And I threw 2 engagement parties, and I got stuff from both engagement parties, and I did not return any of it. I would throw the 3rd engagement party and then make sure that no one brought anything. Because I would say, all right, you guys have already blessed me twice. I don't need to be brought any more stuff. I already have enough blenders.
Because you stole things.
And coffee pots. Don't bring me anything else. Just come on out to the party and hang out. I don't want your gifts. I just want you to hang out with me. Celebrate my union.
What kind of gifts do you get for an engagement party?
Yeah.
I mean, blenders. Even in our culture today, so many people are already like living together. I don't even know what to get for weddings anymore because like they don't need a toaster. They've had one for 5 years. I mean,
that's a valid point. Blenders.
I really don't know.
Hey, listen, an engagement party is not a real thing. They're making it up.
It's just a fake party.
I've never heard of it.
Did you have one, Ben?
No, I didn't know such things existed.
Eric?
I've had 2.
Nope. I'm going to have one now.
No one in this room has had one, except for Booba.
Like I said, I've had 2.
I always figure you need a 10-year anniversary party, though, because that's when everything's worn out and you need everything new.
Hey, man, I'm 10 years this year.
There you go.
Yes.
Time for a new toaster.
Do you need a new toaster?
New toast. No, mine's holding up like a beast.
What about blender? Because I can do that.
No, we got a real bad.
It's all
going to
end in about 6 months.
All right, you let me know some small kitchen appliance that I can purchase for you.
I'm bringing a half cooked casserole.
You the towels are all ratted out.
Can I use your oven to cook this? These
actually, you know what I could use?
Silververse bent.
I had a toaster oven that we used before we had kids. We used to make the stuff in the toaster oven. It said "caution hot" at the top, and I wrote "wife" next to it. And I had points for a year and a half.
Caution,
18 months of compliments. Wife. Caution, hot wife. And I thought, booyah, I cook stuff in the toaster oven for no reason, just so I can remind her that I made a sweet compliment on the toaster oven. And then she threw it out, and I thought, hey, I can't write on the oven.
Hey, man, what's a toaster oven?
What?
Seriously?
What's a toaster oven?
You're a Luddite.
It's like a little oven.
Yeah, it's the marriage of the 2 greatest things ever.
I know what a toaster is, and I know what
do you
oven
think it
is? What's a toaster oven?
Think it chops food? I mean, the name is kind of implied.
We're the most worthless single man I've ever met.
What is it? Like, seriously, is it a small oven that, like, sits on your counter?
It's like the little cookie oven we have downstairs.
It's just the larger than a bread box, but barely.
What is a bread box?
I was going to say, that's not going to work. Our bread's eaten.
Gentlemen, I'm being completely serious right now. Like, I have never even heard of a toaster oven. What is this thing? So is it a small oven that sits on your...
So it basically, think of it, it works like a toaster works, right? It heats up coils, except they're at the bottom, and it's about the size of a thing that you could fit like a Totino's pizza in.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Or you could put toast.
It's like a toaster oven.
Hey, man.
It's a little baby
Stop
oven.
Defining the word with the word.
What's a bread box?
I've never even heard of a bread box. What's that?
It's like a standard size
of bread box.
Being stupid, is it legitimately just a box for bread?
Yeah.
Why do you need a box for your bread?
So it doesn't get stale.
Keeps the dogs out.
What?
And the rats.
Jeez, Dan.
You have it on your counter.
Yeah, so people used to bake bread at home. They didn't.
Right.
It didn't come with cellophane on it.
Yeah.
So why do we need them now?
Well, it's falling out of favor, definitely.
And bread has cellophane on it.
We got one for a wedding
present.
What's
the point of toaster ovens if you have a toaster in an oven?
It's a two-for-one, and it takes up way less space.
Why do I have a toaster and the oven? Why do I? No, you're taking
it takes
up more
less
space.
Time to heat up if you're just throwing in a little mini pizza or something.
A little pot pie.
Eric, I want you to ask yourself when the last time I did something mini was. Like, I don't think I've ever eaten a mini pizza.
Okay, hold on. I'm going to ask you a series of logical questions.
Okay, fair enough.
And then we're going to get to the end of this thing.
Okay, cool beans.
Does it take longer to heat up a whole house or one room?
One room.
That's why you buy a toaster oven.
Okay, that's fair.
Done.
Thank you.
I know what a toaster oven and a bread box are.
No, you don't.
Are there any other small appliances I don't know about that I need to know?
No, bread box is not an appliance.
It's just a box.
Well, okay. It's literally just a box?
How about a milk box?
For bread.
Uh-huh. A milk? Is it a box for milk, Dad?
I had a milk box.
Yes. Outside, the milkman would drop them off.
It's a milk crate.
What?
Yeah. There's like a little metal thing with a little...
Not everybody was alive.
Gentlemen,
in
I don't remember a time
Dan.
Before the internet.
Yeah, well, Dan.
I used to deliver newspapers. A lot of times people wanted their newspaper in their milk box.
They were pretty specific about that?
Yeah.
Well, they'd have to catch you doing it. They didn't have cell phones. Put it in the milk box, Dan.
They'd leave a note.
Oh.
Boy.
I don't know how people do stuff back in the day.
All right, this is getting ridiculous.
It's a little metal box.
All right.
Toaster oven.
You want secular's advice here?
Yeah, let's have it.
Okay, secular advice.
I forgot the question.
She says, no, I think by now you have given enough. And considering how your friend's son's luck has been after these engagement parties, I can't imagine his family inviting the same people a third time and expecting them to give him anything more than their good wishes. Hey, man, he thought a big life change was coming. Celebrate it with him every time. I mean, I wouldn't attend an engagement party, but if it was some kind of other party or something, like a birthday, I'd go 3 years in a row.
If it were me, I would return the stuff. If I was the one engaged and it broke off, I'd be like, hey, thanks, guys, but it didn't work out.
Yeah, but people always buy you crap that they didn't want anyway. Now, that's what a wedding
problem.
Gift is.
There's no receipts for that stuff. They don't ever expect that toaster oven back.
Yeah.
Here's these towels back that say Chuck and Linda forever.
Yeah. Nobody wants two Hamilton Beach blenders at their place, you know what I'm saying?
Awkward embroidery.
They were three for $29 at the Kohl's.
I took one, I put one in my daughter's room, and I gave you the third one.
All right. Yeah. No, I think that's all right. That seems all right.
You're listening to Live from the Path on livefromthepath.org. Maybe your internet is catchy and doesn't work right, and you're not catching it. But if you are, thanks for sticking around the show. You can also catch the broadcast on 99.3 KTIA every Saturday night at 7 o'clock. I believe we're sandwiched right between two other shows,
which
is pretty standard for terrestrial radio.
You're the best out man of the biz.